Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the day of the New Hampshire primary. And we are going to be talking politics the first hour of our program today. We'll be looking at a very interesting organization, Project Vote Smart, the first half hour of our program today. And Rachel Maddow will be joining us a little bit later. It is a chance for all of us to become highly informed on where the candidates stand on numerous issues. It's an organization that was founded by, get this, for a founding board, George McGovern, Barry Goldwater, John McCain, Michael Dukakis, William Proxmire, and Bill Frist. It provides it is quite a bipartisan group. It provides all citizens with the nation's first voter's self-defense system, and we'll find out what exactly that means as we speak with Richard Kimball, who is the founder of Project Vote Smart. He's going to be at the January 8th meeting today of the Rotary Club of Milwaukee to talk about how this project is bringing blue and red states together to help Americans cast informed votes. And we'll be welcoming phone calls for him as well. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. And Richard is from Tucson, Arizona. Hi, Richard.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Yeah, great to have you here. Well, we're in the swing of politics. You know, it's funny, though, many of us who follow this so closely, and we've been doing shows for a long time on all of this, I am dumbfounded. I saw a news report, maybe you saw this as well, I can't remember what station, where they were showing pictures of various candidates to potential voters, and nobody knew who anybody was. And I'm thinking, am I living in a different kind of world here or what?
Yeah, one of the recent polls that is sort of fun for our staff, isn't fun, it's a little disappointing, but more people in the country know who Beyonce Knowles than can tell you that the Vice President of the United States is Dick Cheney.
Oh, no.
I actually mentioned that in the speech today. I just thought that was just mind-boggling that you know, so many people are just not kicked into gear. Now, in the primary states, as we were talking earlier before airtime here, they really are in places like Iowa where they're just the focus of all attention and people get excited. But most people, I think, don't want to pay attention to politics until they have to.
Why, Richard? Why is that?
I think they're just cynical about politicians. I think they're just turned off about the sort of self-serving nonsense that captures so many campaigns and their promotional and their evasiveness on questions, and they just don't want to deal with it until it's shoved down their throat and they have to go to the polls.
Yeah. The press has been criticized, and tell me if you think this is valid criticism, for mostly reporting on a horse race, that we're not looking critically at the issues in the campaign. It's who's up, who's down.
Well, I think there's a lot of criticism to go around, and news organizations, not so much one like this, but a newspaper is going to sell newspapers, and they're going to end up doing this stuff that is sexy and entertaining and helps them sell newspapers. And I think that's sort of natural to the environment of any competitive free enterprise. But I don't really blame anybody for what's going on in politics. I think we're all part of the problem. Mm-hmm. Candidates behave the way they do because of all the money and the need to manipulate measure citizens and what they want to purchase in the marketplace and tailor images to fit. And citizens are to blame because, we just don't take the time to really delve into issues, and it's very hard when newspapers have cut down on their reporting staffs. I mean, my hometown newspaper 20 years ago had, which is Tucson, had 5 political reporters on staff, 20 years ago. Now they've got one
that
covers politics. So, it's all being dumbed down, and people know it's being dumbed down. It's frustrated them over the years. That's why there's been such low participation levels, particularly amongst young people. There seems to be some hints that that's turning around this election, which I think is a real positive sign. We'll see if it holds up through Election Day. That'll be a very positive sign if people actually show up that are under 30.
So tell me about this founding board. I read the list of actors here, and it's just they're all over the political spectrum. These people all got together when and decided we needed more info?
We joke that you can't look at our founding board without hating some of us. And It's actually a requirement put on by the volunteers and the students that actually run the project and make it possible that you can't get on the founding board without a political enemy. So Carter and Ford served for 6 years as they were starting to learn how to do this and test various procedures. McGovern, Goldwater. My favorite pairing was always Newt Gingrich and Geraldine Ferraro.
You know, gosh.
Bill Proxmire was a huge supporter of this.
I would imagine he would
have
been.
Enthusiastic and a big part of the reason we were successful. And now, finally, after 16 years and 6,000 people building it, it's finally ready to go. And but that's why there's that eclectic board, that they won't let anybody on unless they come on with a political. And there's some independents on it. There's a Green Party member. The former presidential candidate from the Natural Law Party is on the board. So it's really covers the gamut to make sure that people realize this is not an organization that deals with supporting or opposing candidates or any issues. This is just defending the citizens' right to the facts about all these characters that want to run our lives.
So you have this huge database of facts on everybody running for major office?
Yeah, we cover actually 40,000 candidates.
Oh, my gosh. And, wow.
It's an enormous effort involving hundreds of people to deal with all the details. And basically what we do, in a nutshell, the easiest way to understand it, and we don't want to frighten people by saying it's an enormous database, all we do is force candidates, with or without their cooperation, we've become very good at this, to fill out a detailed application of employment, just the way all the rest of us have to when we apply for a job. And the categories of information are exactly, if I were applying here at the radio station to help you out here, you want to know my education, my background, my history, we collect that on all. If somebody says, hire Richard Gimble, he'd be a great disc jockey or whatever, you want to know who that is I know you don't have many disc jockeys here, but on some stations you do. But you'd want to know who that is vouching for me. That's the money, so you can instantly see where their money's coming from. If I've had the job before at radio, you'd want to know how I performed. That's the voting records, and we've come up with very good ways to break that down into issue areas so that you don't need to know bill numbers and bill titles, and then converting it into layman's terms so you can actually see how you've been represented by your state legislator, or your governor, or your congressman. If I've been evaluated in the past, you'd want to look at that. Well, there's about 200 what we call selfish interests in the country that evaluate candidates as it applies to that selfish interest. You have the right to choose groups, the right to life groups, the pro-guns, the anti-guns, right, the labor groups, the Chamber of Commerce groups or business groups, the doctors, lawyers, teachers, nurses, the worm growers of America is the most obscure one of our students found. If somebody's out there that does an evaluation, we simply convert it into like a grade in school so you can see whether they're getting a thumbs up or a thumbs down from somebody. We interview all the candidates to the extent they're willing to answer issue-oriented information. It's taken 6,000 people to test various ways of doing this at our research centers that have been at universities, or now we have our own basic campus. It's a beautiful retreat facility that people come out to in the middle of the Montana Rockies, this extraordinarily beautiful high-tech retreat, which is, you know, most of the people come out and volunteer full-time for a couple of weeks or 10 weeks, 2 weeks to 10 weeks, and basically this incredible facility is designed to say thank you, because the work is tough. You know, you have to do all the background checks. You have to, you know, when you data enter it, you have to make sure you're accurate. We actually have a system that if they data enter a voting record, they data enter the voting record, and then after they've done that for a particular candidate, it goes into a system where we put in intentional errors, and then it has to be proofed until all the intentional errors are found, and there are no other errors. So making sure, you know, we're dealing with people's reputations, so we do not make mistakes. I say that very boldly, and we don't. We don't make mistakes on this data. We realize that our reputation depends on the accuracy. So that basically, in the end, a right-wing conservative and a left-wing liberal can turn with equal confidence that there is at least one place they can turn to get the accurate information about these people that are going to be making the decisions as our representatives.
And then how do we get that information?
Oh, it's all free. We're like a library. People don't know it exists yet. We're just now in the business of starting to announce it to the public, but they can just it's votesmart.org and type in their zip code, and all the candidates from President of the United States down to their local level will appear, and they can simply highlight one and go into their voting records instantly by subject matter or their money or whatever they want. It's very easy to use. The database is enormous, but that shouldn't – I don't want that to be an impediment to people. We've tested ways that it makes it very easy. All you have to do – it's all designed so that you can decide – for yourself as a unique individual what issue areas you're interested in and what candidate you're concerned about that issue with, and you just instantly get to it. And you can do it by through the website, or this always surprises people. You can, in our system, you can dial 888-VOTE-SMART, and what will happen if you do that is you'll find out that you get your own personal real human being researcher on the other end of the line who will look up whatever you want to know.
That's remarkable.
So it's an incredible system.
Yeah. And is it that it's getting launched now because the technology wasn't sophisticated enough to do this before now?
No, it's getting launched now because it took us 16 years to build it. This is an immense system. The last two major components were just installed, took us the last 2 years to build. One is the coordinating of over 200 political scientists with our staff nationally to track every key vote in every state legislative body in the country. So in layman's terms, so you don't need to know bill numbers and bill titles. You just know I'm interested in education, and you can plug that in and instantly see where the key votes were, recent key votes on education in layman's terms, and see how you were represented by your state legislator or your congressman. That took us a long time. And now we have a team of people that track every public utterance that every governor makes, every gubernatorial candidate, every congressional U.S. Senate candidate, every presidential candidate. When I say every candidate, I mean everyone. We're covering 122 candidates for president of the United States. People don't know there are that many, but that's how many have made the legal requirement. And all you, if you want to go to somebody and see what they've had to say about, say, immigration, just type in the word immigration. And every time they ever uttered it is immediately highlighted in their interviews, so you can see what they had to say about that or any other subject matter. Just type in the words.
What a huge project.
Yeah, it's been a great thing for me personally. I used to be in politics 20 years ago, and this is certainly the most rewarding thing. Mm. The fact that we were actually able to do it and now it's being announced is very satisfying to me and a lot of people that have been involved from the very beginning of the
effort. Where did you get all these volunteers? Who are they?
Well, it's a very interesting and eclectic group like the Founding Board. It's people, citizens. Most of them are students. I'd say 70% to 80% of them are students from universities all over the country that come in on internships. In fact, 20 foreign countries have been represented. People that have found out about this have come in from foreign countries to try to help build it and then model it in their own home countries, although that's very difficult to do. And then the rest of them are mostly people that can afford to come out and give 2 weeks of full-time effort for it. And they're usually retired. They're, 50, 60, 70. We had our record is a 93-year-old that came out into the Montana wilderness and was an incredible fellow that chipped in and helped. But those are the people. That's been 6,000 of them that have cycled through the system. Some people have turned it into a yearly vacation and come out. Because the place is extraordinary. It's really in the wilderness, surrounded by high peaks and its own lakes and streams.
I'm on my way.
Pristine.
Sounds great.
And so the people have turned it in. And that's where they've come. And it's taken us this long to build it. And so now that it's done, we wish people that had been so valuable in starting it were still with us, like Bill Proxmire and Bill Barry Goldwater, that have Mo Udall and some other people that were so fundamental at the designing the idea and helping us get it started and how it might happen. But now that it's done, I think we're going to knock the socks off a lot of people. People are so – we're already getting as many as 16 million hits a day on the system. We haven't even had we haven't even started really gotten into the announcement yet, which is just started the other day with this bus that's coming to town today. Unfortunately, we have rainy weather. I wish people were coming. It's what is it called? The Memorial –
War Memorial.
It's going to be there this morning, and I think around 11 o'clock to 4 o'clock. So people can actually go into this enormous bus that has a movie theater on it and go in and see how it's done and practice on the commercials and train them how to defend themselves from all this self-serving hype and nonsense that they get bombarded by from the candidates.
Right. Well, I would imagine that for the press it's a valuable resource as well, for people who are doing the really good reporters who are doing a lot of digging, to have that kind of record, that kind of database is invaluable to the press.
Yeah, the media was a problem for us. They were using it so extensively. They were jamming up our systems years ago.
Oh, my.
And so we actually created a reporters resource center to use special services for journalists. And that occurred, and this is sort of a silly story, but we got a call from a Chicago anchorman, a presidential election when we were testing this a few years ago, that was assigned to do a story on the Electoral College and called up one of our students and asked where it was located. And so we thought we might want to do some special. Uh-huh. You know, television journalists are not always trained in the political arena, and a lot of journalists aren't, and they don't know a lot. They're thrown at doing a story, and of course, candidates love that, because if they don't know politics, they can just twirl them and spin right. the story any way they want.
Right. How were you involved in politics?
I was in the Arizona in the state legislature for years, and then was the chairman of the Corporation Commission, which ran utilities, and became somewhat semi-famous in Arizona. I'm the dead political body that John McCain walked into the U.S. Senate over 20 years ago. We were both running for Barry Goldwater's seat when he retired. I was the Democratic nominee. He's now on our board, by the way, and been very supportive of the project.
Yeah, what an absolutely fabulous project, and I'm so happy we know about it so we can tell listeners to go there right now. Yeah. We're going to welcome phone calls. Join us if you'd like. Our number is 800-486-8655. If you're in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. Some of you, if you have computers handy, may want to go to votesmart.org and find out what it's all about. But it is this, it's just phenomenal. All these candidates, 40,000 candidates, and a record of how people have voted and what they've said on various issues. What an incredible resource for citizens of this country to have in this major election year. Join us. We have just a few more minutes with Richard Kimball. Rachel Maddow joining us the second half hour of this program to look at what's going on with the New Hampshire primary and what's going on with the presidential election year. 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. And for those of you who are in Milwaukee, the Project Vote Smart Purple Bus will be parked in front of the War Memorial. It should arrive about 11 today, so you can walk into it to figure out how to use this whole system. I'm Kathleen Dunn. Join us. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Richard Kimball, founder of Project Vote Smart, is our guest. After 16 years of work, this is up and running, and what a phenomenally valuable resource it is for voters all over the country during this important election year. Our phone number here is 800-486-8655, 227-2050 if you're in Milwaukee. And Frank from Milwaukee is our first caller. Hi, Frank.
Good morning. How are you?
Fine, Frank. How are you?
Well, I could be better, but I'm very fascinated by this project. It's an idea I had a long time ago. I wondered why it never happened.
Well, here it is. It just took a long time to put together.
What's the next step? An idea I had was to link financing resources. Where these people get their money would be just as there. This whole thing is about transparency, which it appears to be.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know who's financing the politicians that are running the show.
Mm-hmm.
This would be the natural place to put that information, or at least a link.
Right.
It's there. We work very closely with the Center for Responsive Politics and the National Campaign Finance Library, and the one in there's another one that does it all for state legislators and local officials. And we do links with that, direct tying your candidates directly into their campaign finances in ways that are very easy for people to understand, so you can instantly see who's funding them. And so that's right on the system. The five categories of information in this system are their biographies, their voting records, their issue positions, if they're willing to state them, all their public utterances and keyword searchable databases, the performance evaluations done by every organization that does that, and their campaign finances. So it's right there in the system.
Great.
All right.
We appreciate the effort. Saved me a lot of trouble.
Yeah, it sure does. Everybody, thank you so much for your call. And what, it costs money to keep your organization going, too. Did somebody just give you a big grant, or how are you rolling?
Well, it's very carefully protected. I mentioned that you can't get on the board without a political enemy business, which is a big part of it. But we won't take any money from any corporations or unions or anybody that lobbies or advocates causes. It's a self-imposed rule, so that everybody knows that we aren't trusted or influenced by any kind of interest. The two sources of money, there's about 40,000 people now that have heard about this, gotten excited, and are willing to help out either by coming out and helping us, literally, on two-week visits at the ranch, or 10 weeks if they're a student internship, or people that maybe can't do that and are willing to help the pay the finances of those people that are willing to come out. The work is horrible. It's monotonous, redundant, repetitive hell.
Mm-hmm.
Because your data entering all the time and proofing all the time. That's why it's done in this extraordinarily beautiful place where there's some entertainments after you get out of work.
Yeah.
But it's really tough work. And then, so that and that protects it. And then it sort of operates like the Peace Corps. Even the people on the paid staff don't get paid much. They sign up for a 2-year tour with us.
Mm.
They have to sign up for an election year's 2-year, and they get hired on staff. We're actually hiring people now because we've been so overwhelmed by the usage of the system. Really, we're desperate for some new, competent, capable, qualified, idealistic staff to come out. So if anybody's listening, we are hiring, trying to fill in the gap. You have to come out and spend a Montana winter, but it's beautiful. It's winter. We have nice snow and ice fishing and snowshoeing and snowmobiling and whatever you want. But we are having a little trouble this winter because the campaigns have all gone early and have kicked off, and a lot of excitement happening earlier than it ever has on any of our testing.
Right, how true. So if people want to come, if they want to submit their application, do they go to this VoteSmart
as well? They go right to our homepage, and there'll be a how you can help a section, or help us if you can section. It goes in, and there's internships and volunteer opportunities and all sorts of things.
Right. And somebody said, can you go to just VoteSmart, or is it Vote-Smart?
Either way, you're going to get
That's
us.
What I
get us. Google us, and we're right at the top of Google. We've had so many hits, we're right at the top of the list now in elections.
So this is just rolling. You're just starting with all of this.
Well, like, we haven't kept it a secret those years, but this is now it's done, and so we're now bragging about that we actually pulled the thing
off.
Here,
here
it is.
Thanks very much, Frank, for the call. Reno from Wausau. Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Go right ahead.
Wonderful interview, Richard.
Well, thank you.
Becky is not here.
Oh, my goodness. This is one of our best, my favorite people in the world. Came out every year, ran our maintenance department and our lodge. And
this
is a great guy.
my question today is, you seem to have reached a pinnacle. Is this the end of it then, or the top of it, or do you have big plans for the future?
Well, obviously it's not the end of it in the sense that we're going to go deeper and deeper. Right now we just do on the city councils and county races the vital signs, who they are, when they were elected, how to contact them. But as it grows, we'll go the idea in the end is that we have data on every elected official in the country. And right now, Reno, you'd be shocked at the changes out there. We have about 45 people on staff full-time, and still streams of people coming and going, helping us out like you and Becky did. And so it just goes deeper and deeper. The idea for the project is that in the end we can get it to the point where people don't need to listen to all the self-serving hype of these candidates. And maybe even a candidate can start running for office that doesn't want to spend their lives collecting money from strangers and manipulate citizens and aggrandize themselves on television. Maybe that kind of candidate can have another shot at being our representative instead of all these people that are, in my opinion, embarrassing us.
Yeah. What got you involved, Reno?
Oh, I was looking over the internet and somebody had mentioned VoteSmart, and I heard about their Oregon effort, and they were pretty small then, and it just inspired me that what they were trying to do.
Hmm. So you just jumped right in.
Yeah, and they do have job opportunities listed on their website.
So he could actually do this interview. Reno knows all about it.
He's helping you out.
He could probably tell you some things we wouldn't want you to know.
Thank you, Reno.
Good luck on your tour, Richard.
Thank you.
Thanks. Are you going all over the country, Richard?
I'm on wherever I get invited to an audience and is willing to hear about this stuff, I go. And that's one of the reasons I'm here today is Sarah Kimball. No relation to me, but been wonderful. And we're speaking to the Rotary Club here today. And when we get a nice opportunity like that, we don't have an advertising budget per se, so we need people willing to hear this stuff.
Well, somebody needs to get you all over the place. You need to be on national news. You need to be, on NPR. Really, it's such an incredible thing that you've done here. Everybody in this country right now needs to know about this.
Yeah, they sure do. And
yes.
That's why the bus tour is going 25,000 miles all over the country. And it's getting it. We just did the first official episode of that in Chicago, and all the TV stations showed up. So that never happens in a major media market. So we think we're going to get the word out as well as we can without a $20 million national advertising budget, which is what we were told it would take at a minimum. And, of course, we don't have that kind of money. So
right.
we have to be innovative. And I've got six board members, including myself, that will go anywhere in the country if, you know, to make the stage show presentation, which is today. It's not really a stage show, but it's a very interesting, very lively presentation about what this all means. You know, we formed this struggle to self-govern on the assumption that if we threw the power to govern out to the masses, that they would have the ability to acquire abundant, accurate, relevant information with which somehow they had a chance to be good for us. And so this is to make sure that we always maintain their means to acquire abundant, accurate, relevant information mm-hmm. about who we are as candidates and what we're likely to do for them or to them mm-hmm. if they get elected to office.
Yeah. Well, more power to you. I'm just delighted to hear about this. You know, I sometimes think that we operate in a narrow universe. I was talking to you about our trip to Iowa where everybody was so informed and so engaged, and I'm thinking this is what yeah. this democracy should be, and you've added to it as well. Here we get all the information now as well.
Yeah.
It's so heartening.
Yeah, Iowa is very lucky because they get all these presidential candidates knocking on their door.
I know.
Doesn't happen very often in the country.
No, I know. Boy, do they ever get them. It's just amazing. Yeah. Thank you so much, Richard, for being with us. What a terrific project. And once again, it is votesmart.org. If you want to go to the website right now, www.votesmart.org. If you're interested, they're hiring out there. If you're interested, you can also call 1-888-VOTE-SMART.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's the number.
888-VOTE-SMART.
888-VOTE-SMART. And spend some time doing work that may be hard, but as he said, and I've seen a picture here, the surroundings are beautiful. Thanks, Richard.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, have fun today. Also, their bus is a little bit late arriving in Milwaukee because of the fog, but it will be at the War Memorial Building, which is right on the lake in Milwaukee, if you want to go and test this whole system. It should be here about 11 o'clock today. Members of the community are invited to use this resource. What a valuable resource it is. Thank you. We're going to switch guests now. Rachel Maddow is joining us, and Rachel is the host of The Rachel Maddow Show on Air America, which airs from Monday to Friday, 6 to 8 Eastern Time, 5 to 7 on Air America affiliates coast to coast. She's just, you know, the first time I saw her, and I saw her actually on I think it was the Chris Matthews program, I thought, boy, is she smart. She's just and she's very young. So, you know, smart and young is in this year. She has a doctorate in political science, was a Rhodes Scholar, has a background in HIV/AIDS activism, prison reform, and other rabble-rousing. She has become somewhat of a regular, actually, on MSNBC, and evidently she will be on tonight. So those of you who are watching that channel, and many political junkies, watch that because it's pretty lively. Examination of what's going on. She will be on from 6 p.m. to 1 a.m. 6 p.m. to 1 a.m. tonight, and she's with us to talk about what's happening in this country in terms of the New Hampshire primary and what happened in Iowa and all of that, and we'll be welcoming phone calls for her as well. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. Send us an email if you would like, and that is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Rachel, hello.
Kathleen, thank you so much for having me back on the show.
Oh,
it's so nice of you.
We're delighted. And you're on television all the time now. I'm so glad you've become prominent. It's good. It's good.
It would be great if it were my job, but it's kind of my hobby. My job is being on the radio, and so this TV thing has become a real time sop as a hobby.
Right, exactly. And particularly now. You're going to be on all night tonight.
I know. You know, I did the MSNBC caucus night coverage from Iowa last Thursday, and they had me on from about 7:40 until 1 a.m. And at the end of the night, I thought, oh, I bet they're really sick of me. But now they've asked me to come in at 6 and promise to stay till 1 or 1:30. So I guess it worked.
Good for you. It's time for your show. And then maybe they're moving in that direction. I just talked to this fabulous guy. I don't know if everybody in the media should know about this, the founder of Project Vote Smart. Do you know about this?
I do know Project Vote Smart.
Oh, my gosh.
I use their materials all the time.
Somebody, he needs to get on national television so everybody knows about this. 40,000 candidates. They have all their records, what they've said for years back, 16 years in the making.
Yeah.
We should all know about this.
What's amazing, what I have realized, I think since Bush has been in office, and that has really happened at the same time as The internet has become something that is no longer a side issue, but is really the main media for a lot of people's lives. Is that we've got so many amateur, nonprofit, third party, private, hobby references and resources online that we've never been able to get from the big media organizations before ever. And there's so many people who are doing stuff like Project Vote Smart and the various websites that you can get to right now, that there's so much more information and well-indexed, well-put-together information at our fingertips right now. We have no more excuses to not be perfectly informed.
You're right. It's great. What a terrific resource. All right. Well, I don't want to speak too early here, but something is happening in this election, and what was inevitable is no longer inevitable. Why?
Well, I'm not sure that inevitable wasn't just spin.
Mm.
I think that the Hillary Clinton candidacy on the Democratic side, they wanted it to seem like she was the obvious choice, and that got read as inevitable. And I think that, you know, if you purposely set out to describe yourself as inevitable, that's a very, very easy thing to puncture, because all it takes is one little stumble and then you're no longer inevitable and your candidacy is over. It's a very vulnerable way to put yourself forward. I think that was more of a media creation than it was a Clinton campaign creation. I think they wanted her to seem like the obvious choice and the exciting choice. She no longer, I think, seems exciting to people. I think that Barack Obama and John Edwards, too, seem more exciting, seem more different to voters right now. And I think people are more excited about the prospect of some new blood than they are by the prospect of a woman president.
Do you think there's a chance Edwards could come in number two in New Hampshire today?
I think there is a reasonable chance, but it is not likely. That's
mm-hmm.
what I would say. I'm not a great predictor.
Mm-hmm.
I went and saw Barack Obama and John Edwards both speak this weekend in New Hampshire, and the crowd for Obama was stupendous,
mm-hmm.
waiting outside in the freezing cold for 2 hours before they were let
into
the city, and then waiting inside for 2 hours for him to show up, and then him not apologizing for being late, and nobody grumbling. But that said, as soon as he started speaking, he said, "How many people here are undecided?" And about half the people in the room put their hands up.
Wow.
So for people who are not already committed to him, to be that excited to see him is something. But also seeing John Edwards. The John Edwards event also had a ton of people at it. It was a better run event, and it was actually a more moving, more emotionally grabbing presentation. And I think people who were there were more enthusiastic about possibly voting for him than people had been when they went out and saw Obama. Obama is more of a rock star than he is somebody who you commit to at this point, was my sense. But I do think that Barack Obama will win. What happens to John Edwards, I think, will be very interesting.
What do you think will happen? What do you think will happen with him down the road, Rachel?
Well, Edwards does not have the same options as Obama and Clinton do in terms of staying on till the bitter end. Obama and Clinton have a ton of money. They've
right.
both raised $100 million,
oh my
which is
gosh.
Insane.
It is insane.
But what that means in practical terms is that they can stay in. John Edwards, I heard in person, say this weekend that he will stay in through the conventions, that he will not leave. But he does not have a ton of money to ride on. He could certainly start putting in some of his own money, but even that is not a bottomless well. And so if he does, I think that if he gets second today, it's going to renew some interest in his candidacy, and it's going to keep him going. If he gets third, or if he shows third badly, I think he's going to have a hard time moving forward. But I have to say personally, without being partisan here, I have a lot of faith in John Edwards as a candidate. I think he's in it for I don't think he's doing this as a lark. I think especially
no.
given his personal circumstances, that he is really seriously
right.
seriously committed to what he's doing, and I think people who see him in person feel that from him.
Right. And the guy doesn't sleep, Rachel. In Iowa he was up all night on the bus, two in the morning at a farmhouse, 3 a.m. he's doing the same thing in New Hampshire. I don't know how these people can function.
It's one thing for a candidate to say, I'm going to do a 36-hour marathon here in Iowa to see what I can do, see what I can pull off, and then 5 days later to turn around and do
right.
another 36-hour marathon. I mean, if people were deciding on their candidate based on stamina, I guess that would be to his advantage. But it's the energy is incredible.
Yeah, it is. Well, let's spend some time talking about Hillary Clinton. A lot of people were trying to give her advice as to if she loses today, how to retool her campaign, whether or not she needs to just center on closed primary states and the hardcore Democratic voters. Let's talk about what happened to her. What happened to her? her and how she retools if Obama wins by as much as he won in Iowa. She's got a difficult task on her hands because he's hope. He's the future. He's young. He's drawn these huge crowds. What do you do with that?
Well, I think that she tries to turn that to her advantage by saying, you know, do we want somebody who is admittedly very exciting, but young and inexperienced and new, and, you know, 4 years ago was in the Illinois state legislature. You know, you try to end up saying not vote for the past, because that's the way that her message, I think, is being translated right now. Hey, I'm the past. Vote for me. Didn't you like Bill? No, it turns out people didn't like Bill enough to vote for her in these early states. But in order to – she's going to have to undermine some of the – undermine some of the charm of Barack Obama by – by portraying him as a risky choice rather than as an exciting choice. And that's going to be an uphill battle, but that's not, you know, that's not advanced level politics. A lot of people have done that before. What I find fascinating is that this was supposed to be the year that Iowa and New Hampshire became less important. That's why Iowa and New Hampshire are so early right now, because all of those other states have pushed their contests to be so early as well. But Iowa and New Hampshire were supposed to not be determinative this year. And boy, you wouldn't know that from the laser focus that we've got right now on these two first states. Bill Clinton lost his first five state contests in 1988. The Iowa results had the winners of the Iowa results in Iowa caucuses in both parties didn't win, and the third place finishers ended up the nominees 20 years ago. So anything could happen at this point, but the coverage of Hillary Clinton, you would think that this was do or die for her. I don't see it that way, but that's certainly the way the media is covering it, and the media has a big effect on the way people see the campaign.
It still is such a change in a short period of time. I showed a lot of people this. The New York Times coverage, which I thought was highly favorable to Hillary for a long period of time, did some remarkable pictures, I think, over the weekend of her in the shadows and Obama with all these huge crowds. But yesterday, I don't know if you picked up on this as well, they were talking about Bill Clinton and his not playing to audiences that were what they expected. The hall would be one-third filled. And the first line of the article about him was, imagine what it would be like if Elvis was reduced to playing Reno. You know, I thought, oh, my gosh, they're talking. And he was supposed to be the rock star.
Yeah, but then, you know, but it's incredible because it's true that maybe Bill Clinton isn't playing to very big and exciting crowds. He's also not the nominee. And if you read, for example, the LA Times, they had some amazing political coverage, not only over the weekend, but just in yesterday's paper. And they document kind of in an offhanded way the fact that Obama and Clinton are playing in a lot of the exact same rooms in this last flurry of campaign activity before the primaries. And over the weekend, they were putting basically exactly the same number of people in the room for each candidate. So you can look at it from any angle and choose to tell any story that you want to tell. The schadenfreude of the media right now, taking so much pleasure in Hillary Clinton being down, out, over, suicidal, you know, completely a political joke, is the pleasure that's being taken in her downfall and the way that story is being parroted, kind of, I think, in defiance of the facts, may become a self-fulfilling story.
Oh, my gosh, that's interesting. The other big story, though, Rachel, and this is what you got. No, if you're for the guy or if you're against the guy, that whatever, the fact that young people, that new voters are showing up in huge numbers here makes you think, all right, the younger generation can take over. At least, you know, they're engaged again. They are, and it's early to say this, but I think they are engaged.
I think so. I mean, I think that the young vote is the big unknown here, and it is in a lot of elections, because what will often happen with candidates who lose is that the way they say they are going to win before they lose is that they say they're going to win by getting lots of new voters, or by getting independents to cross over, by turning around the turnout numbers. They're gonna be speaking to young voters and getting people to vote who never voted before. That's what losers say before they lose. That's the way they describe they'll win. But then every once in a blue moon, that turns out not to be false. That turns out to be the way that people really do win. People promise it so many times, but it's so rare for them to actually be able to deliver it. And Barack Obama delivered it in Iowa, not so much with independent voters. That's been oversold a little bit. The Des Moines Register predicted there would be 40% independent voters going to the Democratic caucuses. It turns out it was more like 24%. But the young voters issue is And if he can sustain that, if he really can bring people into the process who've never been in it before, that will be a big X factor in terms of the predictability of this campaign.
Yeah, let's go to phone calls. 800-486-8655. Rachel Maddow is our guest, Air America host, and you'll see her from 6 p.m. to 1 a.m. on MSNBC tonight. That's a long haul. Mary is from Dubuque, our favorite town, is with us. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
How are you?
All right. How are you, Mary?
I'm doing just fine.
Good.
Hi, Rachel.
Hi, Mary. How are you?
I'm doing great. I got a chance to call into your show last week, too.
Oh, my God. You're the same Mary from Dubuque.
Yes, I am.
Oh, this is the Mary who invited us to Dubuque, Rachel. That's how we happened to go there. She called into a show. We said, all right, yeah, we'll be there.
Mary,
yeah.
You're like a talk radio angel.
I'm the voice of Dubuque, I guess. Huh?
I guess you are.
Yeah. So, well, I just wanted to talk about John Edwards and how, you know, I'm kind of frustrated. I understand it. He's not getting much press at all, but he is the anti-corporate candidate. And I don't know, I'm assuming that has something to do with it. But my mother caucused for the first time in her life, and she's 83 years old.
Wow.
And she also caucused for John Edwards.
Hmm.
Wow. So, but, I, you know, I just... I guess he's maybe, I don't know if he's not as flashy or what.
Well, you know, what's interesting, Mary, is that he is not, he has been completely written out of the media coverage, that there's a lot of very uncritical messiah-type coverage for Barack Obama right now. There's a huge pile-on on Hillary Clinton, and those are two exciting stories. That's the big positive story, and that's the big negative story.
Mm.
And John Edwards is a different and more complicated story, and so he's a harder story to tell. And so reporters are not lining up to tell that story because there's these two other easier ones to do. That's how I feel about it.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at John Edwards, not only about where he stands in the polls right now and how he did in Iowa, but when you look at the trend of his poll numbers in New Hampshire, he's going up. Hillary Clinton is going down, and both Barack Obama and John Edwards are going up, and that he has momentum among voters that is not being reflected in the media coverage. But as you know, the media can be an incredible accelerant or a decelerant. They can write their own narrative in a way that changes the way that voters feel about him. But right now, New Hampshire voters are digging him the same way that Iowa voters did, even though the media isn't paying attention to it. And that's I feel like with the Edwards campaign, if he can hold on, this is one of those situations where the media is going to catch up eventually to what voters are figuring out about him. And I know that sounds very positive toward Edwards, but I do feel like he's not getting a great shake in the mainstream press right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, and then regarding the debates, too, this is one of the reasons that I was so bummed that Biden dropped out. I think he just really added some lively rhetoric to the debates. Don't you think so?
Biden is there's a reason that Joe Biden and John McCain are the two guys who get booked on Sunday morning TV.
You got it over and over and over. Yeah.
He's a great talker.
Yes, he is.
He's fun to watch. He's
yes,
fun
he
to
is.
Listen to. He spins great sentences. He has provocative opinions. You're always wondering if maybe he's going to swear this time because it sounds like he's maybe going to, which adds a little excitement to it. I mean, in Joe Biden's announcement that he was getting out of the race, he said, I am not going away. Not only is he going back to the Senate Foreign Relations Chairmanship, which is a powerful place to be, but he's now got a national platform now. And a lot of respect to Democratic voters that I think he didn't necessarily have before this run. I think this run has been a net gain for him, and I think you'll see even more of him than you have in the past.
In somebody's administration, Rachel?
Possibly. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Joe, the thing about Biden is that Biden is if the Democrats hold on to the Senate, he's one of the most important parts of that. I mean, he's been in the Senate since the Jurassic era, and that maybe makes him unelectable as a president, but it does make him an incredible force to be reckoned with in the Senate. And if he holds on, he may find himself majority leader in the Senate, and that may be more of an attractive position for him than being a Secretary of State or some other position like that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Now, one last thing. I don't know if I assume you guys watched the ABC debates the other night. Did you notice that there was a difference in the questions being asked between the Democrats and the Republicans?
Oh, yes.
I mean,
a huge
right
difference.
Away, the Democrats, it's like, what do you think, or would you go into Pakistan? Whereas all the other Republican questions were such softball.
Well, there were tons of them on immigration, too. They went on for a long time, which is the Republican issue, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the point of those
debates, and this is why it frustrates me that they're sponsored by media organizations rather than being sponsored by, my old school civics heroes like the League of Women Voters,
exactly,
or nonpartisan nonprofit groups,
right,
that just have civic interest in mind.
Right.
Is that the moderators ask questions that they think will get the most news-bitey, newsworthy, fighty kind of response from the candidates, and so they pick the issues to ask about which the candidates have had the snipiest clashes in the past, hoping they'll get some of that and they'll end up picked up on local news stations around the country. So I feel like they're, it's essentially trying to goad them into battle on the stuff they think they'll fight about, and it doesn't serve us very well in terms of figuring out who we might want as president.
Mary, we miss you. Thanks again for all you did to get us to Iowa.
Oh, you're welcome, Kathleen. Thank you.
Thank
and Rachel,
you.
I hope you get your own show.
Oh, thank you very much, Mary. Take care.
Yeah.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks. Thanks so much. We'll welcome more phone calls in a moment. And here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 227-2050 if you're joining us in Milwaukee. I'm Kathleen Dunn. We have two lines open if you want to join us. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Rachel Maddow is our guest until 10 today. She is the host of her own show on Air America, and if you want to hear her, I think, extremely astute political analysis, she will be on MSNBC tonight from 6 p.m. until 1 a.m. with coverage of the New Hampshire primary. So you'll be able to see her as well as hear her. 800-486-8655. 272050 if you're joining us in Milwaukee. Let's spend a little bit of time before we go back to calls on the Republican side. The importance of this New Hampshire election to Romney and what's happened to his campaign, Rachel. He has tons of money. He's poured in so much money.
He's got tons of money, but he didn't raise it from other people.
Right. It's his money. It's hard to believe anybody has that much money.
I think it's an awkwardness. I mean, I got a little bit of flack for saying it on the night of the Iowa caucuses, but when he lost to Mike Huckabee, I said, this is started from a distance, Mitt Romney is starting to look like a little bit like Steve Forbes. In the sense of a self-financed candidate,
uh-huh,
who can absolutely compete on paper, but who doesn't necessarily connect in the same way that he would hope to as a realistic candidate. I mean, Mitt Romney was wanted to be the absolute dominating force in Iowa and New
mm-hmm.
Hampshire, and he spent so much money. He was the only candidate in either party running negative ads well before any other candidate was running them. I mean, he's gone for broke in these two states, and if he loses both of them, which is a distinct possibility, it's more likely than not at this point, it's hard to see how he then competes in places like South Carolina, let alone Florida and all the Super Tuesday states.
Yeah. So then is it McCain and Huckabee?
Wouldn't that be amazing?
It is amazing.
But you know what? I feel, Kathleen, and I am a liberal, and so this may be my bias, but I can't imagine any of the Republican candidates being the nominee. None of them seem like somebody who the Republican power structure and the kingmakers in that party will allow to be their nominee for the White House. None of them.
Well, that's interesting.
I mean, I don't know if somebody else will still jump in late. I don't know if they'll draft General Petraeus or what, but it's very hard to imagine them putting up a populist like Mike Huckabee or somebody who they spent so much energy destroying like John McCain, who would be 80 at the end of his second term. It's just hard to imagine.
Yeah. Patty is our next caller from Milwaukee. Hi, Patty.
Hi. My comment is about Barack Obama, and I know that a lot of the spin on him lately is, oh, he's such a dynamic speaker, he's so inspiring, but why doesn't anyone keep bringing up the fact that he is also incredibly smart?
Mm.
He was the first African-American editor of the Harvard Law Review, and for a lot of people may not realize what an incredible thing that is, and that, to me, is why he's so popular, is that he's so smart.
Mm.
I think especially after we are so embarrassed by George Bush and the way he presents himself in the world, the way he speaks, we are looking for someone who we can be proud of, who we know is intelligent. That, to me, is the most important thing.
I think that's very right, and I will say on a personal level, one of the things that I've been most impressed by, and especially early in the race, looking for people to talk to who were involved with campaigns and people who were signing, especially academics and stuff who were signing on with campaigns, the intellectual firepower of the people who signed on early with Barack Obama because they were impressed by him, people like Samantha Power at Harvard and other people who I just have incredible respect for, the intelligence quotient of the people who signed on with him at an early level because they were so impressed with him, people who are not necessarily political, is also deeply impressive.
Yeah, thanks, Patty, so much for your call. Kathy from Waupaca. Hi, Kathy.
Hey, thanks for taking my
call. Sure.
Well, you say that Hillary and Barack have each raised or have raised combined over $100 million. Now, obviously, that goes for advertising.
Mm.
I have heard that in other nations, other democracies, advertising is free to the candidates. Why isn't that the case here?
Wouldn't that be amazing? That's
yeah,
the whole
sure
idea of public financing for elections, that
mm-hmm.
we would have that if you're in, then you get everybody gets the same amount of money to spend, and the advertising is done as a public service, and everybody gets the same amount. And the only difference between the candidates on advertising is the content rather than the quantity of their ads. I believe that's the way it should be done. I don't think we can get there by one candidate declaring unilaterally that he or she will do that and then hope that everybody will follow, because the other candidates will just take it as an unfair advantage. But that, in my opinion, that ought to be our system. And John McCain used to fight for stuff like that. Now he's disavowing ever having had any interest in that goal.
Yeah. So how are you going to keep going for 7 hours tonight?
Well, I think I'm going to be sitting at a desk with Pat Buchanan,
uh-huh.
and I know that Pat loves beef jerky, so I'm going to bring a secret sachet of beef jerky and hope that I can not only keep Pat happy, but also keep myself fueled. That's my big plan.
Oh, I'm so glad you're going to be there. Rachel, thanks so much for being with us.
Kathleen, it's really kind of you to ask me back. Thank you so
yeah,
much.
Yeah, we'll watch you tonight. Rachel Maddow, she's on Air America, has her own show from 5 to 7 in the Midwest, and she's going to be one of the analysts on MSNBC with Pat Buchanan from 6 p.m. until, and I imagine that's, what, 5 here. At 6 Eastern time, because they start their coverage at 5 until midnight. So we'll be watching. And we'll be analyzing, of course, tomorrow during this hour what happened in New Hampshire. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this highly interesting hour. Wasn't it interesting? I learned a lot of things. Remember to go to votesmart.org and get all that information about all these candidates. What a project that is. And thanks to John Treader for on-air production here in our studios. News is ahead.